AM. FM. In Your Face Radio.
Welcome back to the Captain Jack Show. Once again, I'm your host, Captain Jack. I know I haven't been recording much lately, and as I said the last time I was doing the show, there's been a lot going on in my life that I've been trying to resolve. And, you know, and frankly, talking about politics over the last few weeks and months has been very weird. And, in fact, there's so much going on, even from these last few weeks and the cold case posse and Sheriff Pyro's ridiculous press conference last week, as well as the things that Santorum's been saying and doing, and that moron Rush Limbaugh, and all these other things that are going on. There's almost too much to choose from in terms of talking about. It's been really hard getting wrapping my head around all the stuff that's been going around, because it's incredibly stupid, and obviously it's incredibly obnoxious. And I've sort of been taking a back seat and letting the things play out by themselves without really commenting on them much. But there have been some things going on in my life, and I think I'm going to talk about one of those for today's show. And I think probably next week I'll get back into talking about politics some more, and after we see some more of the fallout of Sheriff Barney Fife's report. In any event, a couple of weeks ago, my car broke down, and it broke down. This is now the third or fourth time it's broken down, and each time I was putting money in. And maybe 6 or 7 months ago or so, I put $3,000 in, and then I had another problem. I put a few hundred dollars in, and then I had, you know, this most recent thing. And I knew it was going to be an easy fix. It probably was only going to cost maybe $300 or $400 to fix. But at this point, you know, the car was 7 years old, and it had 158,000 miles on it, and it was at the point of diminishing returns. So I decided to get a new car, and I was looking around, and I saw a Jaguar that I liked. It was a used one, and I made some inquiries about that, but my wife didn't like it, and I kind of knew what kind of car I was going to get, because there was one I was going to get a few months ago, and decided against it at that time. I test drove it. I liked it a lot. It's got nice styling, and it was really just a question of the options that I was going to get on it. And I really wasn't going to get the one that was fully loaded. I was going to get one. It was going to be about $21,000. I'm going to tell you, it's a Kia Optima. And it looks a lot like the Hyundai Sonata, and I think that's pretty much it. I mean, they're pretty kind of unique cars. And they drive well, and they have a great maintenance program and warranty, et cetera, et cetera. So I go to the dealership, and I go on February 14th, because that's the day I've decided I'm going to get a car. And I actually went there not to get the Kia Optima, but I was originally looking at, I saw that they had a used Kia Forte. It was $11,000. I wasn't looking to spend a lot of money, but I found out that it was manual, and even though I can drive manual, it's been a really long time. So I go there, and I don't really like the styling on the Forte. So I go, and I start looking at the Optimas again, and I look, and I see that there's a Beamer that they have there. It's a 2009 Beamer. It's a 3 Series, and it is sharp. But I'm a bigger guy, and I don't really like Beamers all that much, because I've driven them in the past, and I've never owned one, but I've driven one in the past, and they have really narrow seats, and they're uncomfortable for, you know, for a guy my size. And I really like the car. You know, it was a 2-seater, 3 Series, and it was in really, really good shape. And, you know, I don't need a back seat anymore, because all my kids are grown and they're out of the house. So there's really no reason for me to need a 4-door sedan. And I guess maybe a little bit of midlife crisis was kicking in, and I was really looking at that Beamer, even though I never really considered it. But I push it off to the side, and I go, and I start looking at the Optima again. And the salesman insists that I test drive the Optima, even though I had driven one like 3 months earlier and I liked it. So I'm driving the Optima, and I really like it again still. And really, for me, the only question is, am I going to pick the what color and the options that I want on it? But I said to the salesman, as I came back, I said, look, I want to test drive the Beamer. And I test drive it, and I have this odd look on my face, and the salesman looks at me and says, what's wrong? I said, you don't understand. I said, I wanted to hate it. And he starts to chuckle. I said, no, you don't understand. I really wanted to hate it because I wanted to hate driving it because I wanted to it not to be an option because it's a really impractical car for me to get. And it was also $8,000 or $9,000 more than the Optima that I was actually looking at. And he laughs. I said, but I don't hate it. I mean, this thing drove like a dream. It handled. It hugged the road, and it was great. And I'm going to tell you, I really, really liked it. I really, really wanted to hate it. So in any event, I don't buy the car that day. I tell him I'm coming back on Saturday. I'm going to buy a car. And I'm still leaning towards the Optima, but part of me is tugging at the Beamer. So Saturday comes around. I said to my wife, look, I want you to come with me to get the car. And she's like, you know what kind of car you want to get? I said, what do you need me for? I said, well, first of all, I want you to help me pick out the car, but I also want to make sure you go with me, because if you don't, I'm going to come back with the Beamer. She says, you're not getting the Beamer. I hate the Beamer. I said, but you haven't even seen the Beamer. I hate Beamers. You hate Beamers. You're not getting the Beamer. I said, you better come with me, because if you don't come with me, I'm coming home with the Beamer. So she comes with me, and we pick out a beautiful color, a dark cherry. But because I was prepared for the possibility that I was going to buy the Beamer, I was also prepared to get a upgraded Optima that had more features in it because it was still less expensive than buying the used Beamer. And it was the practical car to get. It was, it had, like I said, it's got 120,000-mile warranty on it. It was brand new, etc. It's safer, it's less expensive to maintain, and all these things. But I have to tell you, it's a cool car. And it's got all these incredible features. And one of the most important things, I think, when you are looking to buy a new car is that you buy a car that you can, it fits within your lifestyle. It fits within your coolness level. Because if you buy a car that's not cool enough for you, you're going to end up hating it almost immediately. But if you buy a car that's actually cooler than you are, you kind of have to change your lifestyle. You have to get new clothes. You have to get a new briefcase. I mean, like, I can't put my old battered briefcase in this gorgeous brand new car because it just doesn't fit. So I had to go out and buy new suits. I had to do a lot of different things in order to accommodate the fact that I had this really cool new brand new car. And, for the first time in my life, I'm sitting there going, I know it's just an Optima, but I had swag. I mean, I was driving the car, I had tremendous confidence, I felt like I looked good, I felt good. And then I found out, after talking with my sister, that my father got the exact same car. Now, you've heard me talk about my father before, and my father's 80 years old and he lives in Florida, and now I am no longer driving a cool car, I am driving an 80-year-old man's car. And unfortunately, that took all of the cool factor away for me, kind of destroyed the car, and I really regret not getting the Beamer at this point as much as I love the Optima. And I know it sounds silly that I'm saying how cool a car the Optima is. I don't think people think of it as a cool car, but I'll tell you what, you drive it, it's pretty cool, and it's actually, I thought it was cooler than I was, and now it appears that, I am in fact turning into my father. My wife on a daily basis is telling me that I have more and more of my father's expressions and mannerisms, and I don't think she considers this to be a good thing. But, now the metamorphosis is almost complete, and pretty much the only thing left to do now is for me to get some muscle shirts, buy a condominium in Florida, and move down there and wait to die. And, that's really not a pleasant thought. It's also not a pleasant thought that I'm turning into my father, but, that's one of the circles of life. But another thing, in this last week that's happened that I've really given a lot of thought to in the past, and I guess, I never really created a bucket list, but somebody asked me why was I going to do the thing that I'm about to tell you I'm going to do, and I said, I guess it's kind of on my bucket list, and even though I've never done one, this is just something I've always wanted to do, and I've really thought about it a lot over the last several years, and that is I am going to give my shot and take a shot at doing stand-up comedy. I'm going to be going to a club called the Helium Club in Philadelphia. I don't have the night yet. I'm going to be doing an open night and see how it works, and I'll see. I have this feeling that if I get laughs, I'm going to be addicted to it and try it over and over again. And if I don't get laughs, I don't know. Maybe I'll go back and give it some more shots. And you know, some people tell me, you know, wow, you must really have some balls to try stand-up comedy. And I'm sitting there going, you know, how different is it from what I do on a daily basis? You know, I'm in court on a daily basis. I make arguments in front of a judge. I make arguments in front of a jury. I try to persuade people into believing, you know, my position on things. And you know, it's a performance. You know, it's an act. It's really just dramatic acting as opposed to comedic acting, and I don't think that there's that much of a difference. I've never had a problem with standing up in front of a group and speaking. I have always been one who tells jokes, and I don't mind being the center of attention. I don't think you can be a litigation attorney and really get upset or care about being the center of attention, because if not, you can't do litigation. I mean, you want to draw the attention of every person's eyes and ears in the courtroom when you're speaking. And how is that any different from being a stand-up comedian? Obviously, when I'm in court, I don't want people to laugh at the things that I say, although there have been times that I've used jokes as for effect in a courtroom. But it's all about relating to people in a way where you can connect with them. And I don't see that much difference. So I think the skills that make me an effective trial attorney are the same ones that would help me do be a successful comedian. Of course, you know, I'm writing some of my own material. I do have a friend who is a professional comedian. I gave him some of my stuff, and he gave me some notes, and I'm working on it. And I'm not ready to go out there yet. I haven't actually signed up for the date yet, but I will be doing this, and I'll be announcing it on my show here on Facebook. For anybody who's in the Philadelphia area who would like to come out and see me, and you know, just don't throw tomatoes. But you know, I'm going to try it. I think it's going to be fun. And I'm going to take a break now. And when I come back from the break, we'll talk about a few other things that are going on.
I think this is about as good a time as any to take a break, and I'll be back in about a minute after a word from our sponsors. But by the way, if you're interested in sponsoring the Captain Jack Show, please get in touch with Jay from inyourfaceradio.net.
Would you like to record now? Start anywhere you like.
This is In Your Face Radio. Political talk without all the bullshit. In Your Face Radio. Radio without eating disorders.
Somebody of a felony without being convicted.
It is not outrageous, and I think it's outrageous for people to act as if you can only speak the way our criminal justice system works.
Drug use.
First smoked marijuana somewhere in California.
Or lies.
Moving the economy forward.
In Your Face Radio.
Hi, this is Derek Turner from freepress.net and stopbigmedia.com, and you're listening to In Your Face Radio.
I think someone at my friend's school has this thing called autism. My friend's brother's son has autism. My neighbor's son has autism. My son has autism.
Autism is getting closer to home. Today, 1 in 110 children is diagnosed with autism. That's a 600% increase in the last 20 years. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org.
High. Join us every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Pacific, for JD In Your Face, a political rock goddess. Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here at InYourFaceRadio.net. Give it a voice.
In Your Face Radio.
We'll do it live! F*** it! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
We're doing it live.
And we're back. And I listened to the first half of the show before I started doing the second half. And I'm hearing a lot of problems with the sound quality. I'm working on it. I apologize. My normal microphone, for some reason, isn't working with my audio program. And I'm using a secondary microphone and I'm getting an awful lot of clicks. So I apologize. As a matter of fact, that's one of the things that has stopped me from recording for a while, because I'm trying to improve the sound quality of the show. I was actually talking to the producer of the show at one time, and I was talking over Skype, and I was using my normal microphone, and she had complained about sound quality on the show also, and you know, it's a legitimate thing. I'm not a technician, and I'm really having a hard time getting a good sound quality. Certainly not one that I'm happy with. But when I was talking to her at Skype with my normal microphone, she said the sound quality was good. So I actually was planning on creating my shows basically using creating YouTube videos and then with my regular microphone, and then converting them to MP3s, which I have the capability of doing. Unfortunately, the camera that I have, the webcam that I have, is incompatible with the computer that I have at the present time, and I have to put it on a different computer. So I'm going to try and do that for my next show. I'm going to be doing it from a different computer, and I'm going to be seeing if that helps by creating a YouTube video and then converting it into an MP3 and see if the sound quality is better. I'm hoping that it is, because I really do want to have a professional sounding show, and this just doesn't sound as good as I would like. Going back to the week, anyway, I wasn't planning on talking about politics today, but I really do have to discuss the March 1st cold case posse news conference by Sheriff Apiro. And the reason why I have to discuss this is because it was so ludicrous, so predictable, and so absurd that I'm having a hard time believing that anybody is taking it seriously. Now, this was supposed to be, and we knew it wouldn't be, but this was supposed to be an independent investigation into allegations that the birth certificate was released by the White House on April 27, 2011, was not genuine. And I was amazed by what I actually saw, because, number one, Jerome Corsi was allowed to speak. Now, in Jerome Corsi speaking, he conceded the fact that he had spent 18 hours over the course of a few days with the cold case posse, giving them the information that he had. Now, for those of you who have been following this at all, you know that Jerome Corsi created a book of fiction called Where's the Birth Certificate? And he gave all of this information to the cold case posse investigators. How any independent investigating body could call itself independent and have any communications with that man or allow him to have any input into the investigation is beyond me. Now, I've also learned that John Woodman, who is in fact a computer expert and forensic document expert, offered his services to the cold case posse on at least two occasions, and they refused to even speak with him. Now, why is this significant? Because the actual report by the Cold Case Posse investigating team was written by someone of the name of Mara Zebest. Now, Mara Zebest is somebody who has been put up by WND, where Jerome Corsi works, as an alleged expert in Adobe, and she is one of the people who has maintained the idea that the document that appeared on the website was fraudulent. And, of course, the fact that she wrote the report is absurd. Again, the question is, was this an independent investigation? Were there things in there that we knew to be not true? Yes. I mean, one of the things, and there's an excellent debunking of this on thefogbo.com, but one of the very first things that one of the people came at Zulu came out and said is that there was no paper document. Well, there was a paper document. It was seen and examined by people on the day of the press conference on April 27, 2011. Photographs were taken of it. It's absurd to think that there was no original document that was scanned in. So the very first premise of this committee or whatever it is absurd. And it went downhill from there. And the idea that somebody who is being an investigation by the Department of Justice, who has a history of retaliatory politics, for him to be involved in this investigation at all is just, it's absurd. And it's nice to see that for the most part it has been given all of the due respect that it's entitled to, which is none. But, of course, it has empowered the people on the internet who, you know, have been maintaining this position all along, including Dr. Orly Tates Esquire, who now has ramped up her rhetoric and is actually attaching to, in her pleadings now, where she's going all over the country, links to the YouTube videos of the press conference, as if this is actually evidence in any of the proceedings. The worst part about the fact that this press conference took place is the fact that for that segment of society that believes this bullshit, and for those people who are nutty enough to actually follow this, some of them are violent, and you know, I've discussed this in the past, and you are now going to see people who are even more committed to the idea that President Obama is not eligible to be president, who are not going to get the satisfaction in the courts. And I think the only thing that Apiro actually did was increase the possibility, or I should say probability, that there's going to be violence related to this. And shame on Sheriff Apiro, because there's going to be blood on his hands when there are people who are going to take matters into their own hands and, in the words of some of these people, exercise their Second Amendment rights. It's beyond belief that he would have the balls to actually come out with this in the manner that it was done. If you did watch the press conference and the videos that were shown during the press conference, it's my understanding that the videos that were shown during the press conference were actually narrated by somebody who was a very renowned birther. The idea of any of this is so absurd as to be beyond the point of any belief whatsoever. And yet, it maintains to be an issue, or non-issue, a phony issue, going into the fourth year of President Obama's presidency. Now, again, I don't pretend to be an Obama supporter, but I believe that issues like this that are very divisive and potentially very violent should not be in the forefront of our political discourse. I do want to talk about Rush Limbaugh for a little bit, but not in the context of the events that happened in this last week. But I do think those illustrate everything that is wrong with politics today, to be fair. Now, I was gotten to a discussion with somebody about Rush Limbaugh over this past week with regard to the comments that he made about Sandra Fluke, which were not only a lie, but outside the bounds of decency. And when I say a lie, I'm not saying whether she is a slut or she isn't a slut. What was a lie was how he represented what her position was. And I mean, I don't know anything about Sandra Fluke. I'm sure she's a very fine young lady, a law student at Georgetown, which is an exceptionally good law school. And but Limbaugh lied about his position. And the reason why that's important, not his position, her position, and the reason why this is important is about the conversation I had with this person who just thinks that Rush Limbaugh is brilliant and that he is just God's gift to the world, and that the only reason why people hate him is because he tells the truth. Well, my experience is he doesn't tell the truth, but that's not even what I'm getting at here. The brilliance of somebody like Rush Limbaugh is the fact that he gets to be and say anything he wants to without any accountability, because he never runs for office. He never has to back up his statements with actions. But even more so, and this is where a 24-hour news information cycle becomes important. And if you take nothing else from me today, take this, because you can go to the bank with this, that when it comes to the political debate, the person who frames, or the side that gets to frame the question of the debate, generally wins, because they're the first person that gets into the psyche of the American people, and then the other side has to be in a position where it's seeking to correct what the first person is saying. And you're not actually getting to the debate. You're debating the question in the debate. So you've already lost. And in the particular thing that Rush Limbaugh did, which was brilliant, because it was evil, but it was brilliant, was that he framed what Sandra Fluke did as being that she wants the American people to pay for her contraceptives. And what that did was that it framed the debate on whether there should be public subsidy of contraceptives, and that gets into the question of morals, church and state, the role of the church, and things like that. But that's not what happened. She had indicated that her position very simply was that when it came to health insurance, it should female contraceptives should be covered as part of health insurance. This was not a question of public money. But what it did was it automatically put the other side of the question on the defensive, and it automatically changed the parameters of the debate. And that's why Rush Limbaugh is brilliant, because he has the ability to communicate to enough people and get the debate framed in the way where he's placing the other side on the defensive. Now, I disagree with 90% of what Rush Limbaugh has to say, and I think he's a fraud, and I think he's a phony, but he's brilliant when it comes to doing that. And in politics today, we don't actually debate the issues. We debate the parameters of the debate. And once we stop debating the parameters of the debate and get to the actual merits, then we can sit down and we can talk about things in an intelligent way. But when you get the opportunity to frame the debate and frame the issue in the debate is already over. And I'm going to say goodbye for today. I will be back next week. I'll be doing another show, and I should be doing them on a more regular basis now. Again, if you want to email me, you can email me at captainjack97@hotmail.com or captainjack@interfaceradio.net. and I'll be more than happy to answer any emails. Have a great week. I'll be in touch.